We have a visitor, Victor.
Frank Morgan stepped into the library behind Astrid Magnuson as she entered. Astrid moved aside, giving Frank a good view of Victor Magnuson, as the oil man sat behind a massive desk that was littered with papers. Magnuson had a pencil in his hand, and obviously had been scrawling some sort of diagram on a piece of paper. Frank could see the drawing from where he was, but since he didn't know anything about drilling for oil, it didn't mean a blessed thing to him. Magnuson had taken off his coat and rolled up his sleeves. His thatch of fiery hair was rumpled, as if he'd been dragging his fingers through it. He looked up as Frank and Astrid entered the room.
Morgan! By God, what the hell are you doing here? I warn you, I've got a gun!
Victor, stop! There's no need to be upset. I asked Mr. Morgan to come here tonight.
After what I told you about the way he attacked Hatch and the other drillers? For God's sake, Astrid, what are you thinking?
I was thinking that he might be just the man to help us.
The day I need help from a gunfighter.
That day has come, Victor. You've been complaining for weeks about how the ranchers are trying to run you and the rest of the drillers out of the San Fernando Valley. You know it's only a matter of time until they hire gunmen of their own, if they haven't already. But maybe they won't if they know that Mr. Morgan is working for us. Maybe no one will want to face him. I understand that he has quite a reputation with a gun.
Yes, well, I'm still not convinced he's not working for that Montero woman. They seem rather close.
Is that true, Mr. Morgan? I've seen Dolores Montero. She's a very attractive woman.
I won't argue that point with you, but attractive or not, she doesn't have a bit of use for me. It's true that I rode out to her ranch today intending to ask her for a job. But once she found out who I am, she told me to get off her range.
This is some sort of trick!
It's not a trick. In fact, it wasn't even Mr. Morgan's idea to come here tonight. I went to his hotel and asked him to come see you about a job, Victor.
You went to a hotel by yourself to talk to this gunfighter? Good Lord, Astrid, Los Angeles may be growing, but it's still a small town at heart. Do you know what people are liable to say?
I don't care what people say. I care about you, Victor. And if things keep going like they have been, you're going to wind up either ruined or dead.
Looking flustered now, Magnuson came out from behind the desk and hurried to put his arms around her. He was a lot bigger than Astrid was and looked a little like a red-headed bear as he enveloped her in an embrace and awkwardly patted her on the back with one big paw.
Blast it, Astrid. You know, I can't stand it when you cry.
I know, I just can't bear the thought of you being shot down. It's no shame to ask for help, Vic. And who better to take on those gunmen than a man like Mr. Morgan?
All right. I'll at least talk to Morgan. Will that make you feel better?
I suppose so.
You run along, then. Let Morgan and me talk in private.
There won't be any trouble, will there?
If there is, I won't be the one to start it. You've got my word on it.
All right, then. Thank you, Victor. I know you won't regret this.
I hope you're right.
Magnuson went back behind the desk as Astrid turned to leave the library. While she was doing so, she caught Frank's eye, and suddenly one of her damp, red-rimmed eyes closed and then opened again in a conspiratorial wink that Magnuson couldn't see. She had been acting the whole time, Frank realized, manipulating her brother with her tears. Astrid left the room. Magnuson had sat down behind the desk again, and he motioned for Frank to pull up one of the other comfortable armchairs in the room.
You'll understand if I don't offer you a drink, Morgan. I'm not sure yet if we're going to be allies or not.
That's fine. I'm not sure I want to work for you. I'm here mostly as a favor to the lady.
Now, Astrid was out of line coming to your hotel like that.
No harm done. Why don't you tell me about the trouble you've been having out in the valley, and then we can decide what to do from there.
People have been drilling for oil in the San Fernando Valley for nearly 20 years, but only on a limited basis. I came here to Los Angeles a couple of years ago and started drilling here in town when the boom hit. I did well enough, I decided to expand to the valley.
Your sister told me the fellow who owns this house is in Europe for a year with his family. If you've been out here for 2 years, where were you staying before you rented it?
Astrid wasn't with me then. I just had a room in the boarding house. The same place my drillers stay, in fact. But when she came west, I needed someplace better for her, of course.
I reckon that makes sense. Mind if I ask what prompted her to join you?
Our mother passed away. Astrid had been taking care of her, but when she was gone, there was no reason for Astrid to stay back in Minnesota.
Oh, I'm sorry.
When I decided to expand my drilling operation into the valley, I looked into the situation, of course. and found out the same thing other drillers had discovered. The title claims those ranchers have are pretty shaky legally, especially the Montero, Sandoval, and Lopez places. Those involve Spanish land grants. Some of the other drillers have already filed lawsuits seeking a ruling on them before I even got here.
But you took advantage of the situation anyway, even if you didn't start it, didn't you?
A man's got to grab hold of his chances where and when he finds them, damn it. If you were a businessman instead of a gunman, you'd know that, Morgan.
Go on.
At first, I confined my drilling to areas that I either knew didn't belong to any of the ranchers or property where clear title was in dispute. But my God, Morgan, there's so much oil down there. You don't know what it's like. To a man like me, knowing that there's oil down there is like a man who's dying of thirst, knowing there's a whole lake of cool, clear water right under the ground if he can just get to it.
So you started setting up your rigs wherever you damn well pleased.
Yes, damn it, I did. But only after asking Francisco Montero for permission. And I would have paid him a good royalty on whatever I pumped out of his range. But he turned me down flat, the old bastard.
That's because he was a cattleman, not an oilman.
No, it's because he was a damn fool. Although he had sense enough to marry Dolores Sandoval, I'll give him that. She's a beautiful woman. Every bit as stubborn as her husband, though.
Because she turned you down, too, when you asked for permission to drill on Salida del Sol Range.
I could have made her a very rich woman.
Maybe she's already got what she wants. Not everybody is interested in nothing but money.
What about you, Morgan? Huh? What are you interested in besides money?
I have my own interests.
Well, anyway, I kept drilling, and a couple of months ago, things started happening. My men were shot at. Equipment was damaged in the night. A wagon load of pipe was stolen from a drilling site. We found the wagon and the pipe at the bottom of a ravine. The bastards who took it had stampeded the team over the edge. It took us almost a week to recover all that pipe.
And you think Senora Montero's men are responsible for all this?
I don't know it for a fact, but who else could be behind it? Other drillers have had the same sort of trouble, and it's happened on other ranches, too. I think the whole bunch of them have banded together to run us out. And then they'll bring in drillers of their own.
It is their land.
Well, we haven't had the last word on that.
Have any of your men been wounded by the bushwhackers?
Damn right they have. They've gotten busted arms and legs. A few of them have wound up in a hospital. I'd say we've been mighty lucky no one's been killed so far.
If you hire me, what is it you want me to do?
Put a stop to the harassment, of course.
How do you suggest I do that?
By whatever means necessary, of course.
Including murder?
Damn it! My men are the ones who are getting shot at. Don't talk to me about murder.
The ranchers claim the same thing is happening to them.
What else do you expect them to say? They're just trying to cover up for what they've been doing.
Maybe so.
No maybe about it. I know who my enemies are. The question is, do you want to help me deal with them?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll sign on with you, Magnuson.
And you'll do whatever it takes to stop the trouble in the valley?
I will. As long as I'm well paid.
Oh, you will be. Maybe I'll offer you that drink now.
And maybe I'll accept it.
Magnuson got up and went to a sideboard where he splashed whiskey from a decanter into two glasses. He carried them over to Frank, who stood up to accept the glass that Magnuson offered.
To success.
To success.
Astrid must have lingered outside the library door. She came back in then, and Frank figured she'd been eavesdropping and had heard the glasses clink together, and taken that as a sign her brother and Frank were getting along now.
I take it you gentlemen have come to an agreement?
We have. I'll be honest with you, Morgan, I don't fully trust you yet, but I'm willing to give you a chance.
That's all I've ever asked for. One thing concerns me. I'll have to be around your drillers quite a bit if I'm trying to find out who's been ambushing them. How are Hatch and the others going to react to having me around?
After you handed Hatch a beating, you mean? You let me worry about the drillers. I'll pass the word that you're working for me now, and they'll leave you alone.
I need more than to have them leave me alone. They're going to have to cooperate with me.
Leave that to me. They all know better than to go against my orders.
If we're having a drink to celebrate this new alliance, where's mine?
You don't need a drink. Whiskey isn't ladylike.
My brother has the usual protective attitude toward his little sister, Mr. Morgan. But I assure you, I'm all grown up.
To tell you the truth, I'm not much of a whiskey drinker myself, Miss Magnuson. So I reckon that'll do me. It's been a long day, and I believe I'll be heading back to the hotel.
We'll ride out to the valley together tomorrow, and I'll show you where all my rigs are.
I'll meet you here after breakfast.
Fine. Astrid, fetch Mr. Morgan's hat.
I'll show you out too, Mr. Morgan. Don't pay any attention to the way my brother barks and growls, Mr. Morgan. That's just his way. He doesn't mean anything by it. He's always taken good care of me.
I imagine he has.
He forgets sometimes, though, that I'm only a year younger than he is. I'm 29 years old, Mr. Morgan, and I haven't spent those years in a nunnery.
I don't reckon we'll be seeing a lot of each other. I'll be out in the valley a lot, trying to find out who's bothering those rigs of your brother's.
You don't think it's the cowboys from those ranches?
It looks that way, but I intend to find out for sure.
I'm sure you'll be coming here from time to time. In fact, I intend to make certain of it by inviting you for dinner at least once a week.
Your brother might have something to say about that.
Victor runs the oil field. I run the household. He knows better than to argue with me too much about such things. Good night, Frank. You don't mind if I call you Frank, do you?
Not at all.
And I'm Astrid.
All right, Astrid. Good night.
Frank was up early the next morning. He didn't know whether or not Victor Magnuson was an early riser, though, so he had lingered over his breakfast. The sun was up by the time Frank reined Goldie to a halt in front of the rented mansion where the Magnusons were staying. He wondered whether Astrid was awake yet. Victor Magnuson was up and must have been watching for him. The oil man strode out the front door and gave Frank a nod.
My horse is around back in the shed, but he's already saddled up. I'll be right back.
You're the boss.
Don't you forget it.
While Magnuson was fetching his mount, Frank sat easily in his saddle and looked at the big house, which was even more impressive in the early morning light. He thought he saw a curtain move in one of the windows on the second floor. Astrid, he thought. The curtain fell closed quickly, though, if it had even moved to start with, as if she didn't want him to know that she was there in the window. Magnuson came back a moment later, riding a tall black gelding. He sat his saddle with ease and obviously was accustomed to riding. The butt of a Winchester jutted up from the saddle boot on Magnuson's horse. He also wore a revolver and a cross-draw on his left hip, with a cavalry-style flap that snapped down over the gun. Instead of the suit he had sported the day before, today he had on high-topped boots, whipcord trousers, and a plain work shirt. His hat was the same Stetson, though. As they rode, Magnuson looked at Wolf jogging along beside them.
Is that animal part Wolf?
I don't really know. He's never said one way or the other.
Well, keep him away from me. I don't like dogs.
Frank recalled that John J. Stafford had said pretty much the same thing. What was wrong with these people here in Southern California that they didn't like perfectly good dogs? As they passed through the streets of Los Angeles, Frank looked at the dozens of oil wells dotting the landscape and shook his head in disbelief.
It beats me why folks would want one of those things in their front yard.
The answer to that is simple. Money. They get paid a royalty for every barrel that comes out of the ground. A lot more rich people in this town now than there were a few years ago, and they're only going to get richer.
There are other things in life besides money.
Sure there are. A lot easier to appreciate and enjoy those things if you have plenty of money.
Some of these rigs are yours, you said?
That's right. There hasn't been any trouble with the wells here in town, though. People here are happy to have us drill on their land. The only problems have been out in the valley with those stubborn ranchers.
Magnuson thought of Dolores Montero and the other ranchers as being stubborn. To Frank, it just seemed that they were trying to preserve the way of life they had always known. He understood that attitude. Over the decades, he had witnessed the West changing around him, in some ways for the better, but often not. He couldn't see how having a bunch of clanking, clattering, stinking oil wells all over the place was actually going to help anything. But maybe the times were passing him by, too. In only a few more years, it would be a new century. The 20th century. Out with the old, in with the new, and devil take the hindmost. Frank and Magnuson followed the road through the pass over the Santa Monica Mountains, and by mid-morning found themselves in the San Fernando Valley. Magnuson pointed out some of the oil drilling rigs they passed as belonging to him.
Any trouble with these?
No, but we're not on Montero Range yet. It's where most of the problems have been.
Frank spotted a haze of dust in the air some distance ahead of them. That much dust had to be caused by either a herd of cattle or a large group of riders moving fairly fast. He wondered which one it was. A short time later, Frank reined in abruptly as he heard some noise in the distance. Beside him, Magnuson brought his horse to a halt as well.
What's wrong?
Hear that?
It's not a donkey engine backfiring, is it?
I'm afraid not. Those are gunshots.
Damn it! My men are being attacked again. Come on, Morgan!
With that, Magnuson jabbed his boot heels into his horse's flanks and sent the animal lunging ahead in a gallop. Grim-faced with concern, Frank leaned forward in the saddle and urged Goldie into a run as well. Magnuson was racing blindly into trouble, Frank thought, and they had no idea what they would find when they reached the site of the battle. From what he had heard, though, quite a few guns were going off. The road they were following wound through rolling hills and then ran straight across Montero Range. Much of the landscape was cut through with gullies and shallow ridges and dotted with brushy wooded knobs. As Frank and Magnuson approached one such ridge, Frank spotted spurts of powder smoke coming from the guns of men firing from the top of it. The shots were aimed at a cluster of three drilling rigs on the other side of the road, with a large, circular wooden tank nearby. The drillers had taken cover behind storage sheds, as well as behind the derricks themselves, and were returning the fire.
Those damn cowboys! Somebody's gonna get killed this time!
Frank thought Magnuson might be right. This battle was a small-scale war, with a heap of powder being burned on both sides. A bullet whipped past Frank's head as he and Magnuson approached the rigs. The riflemen on the ridge had noticed the two of them. They were targets now as well.
Come on!
Magnuson headed for one of the sheds. Frank stayed with him. As they reached the shelter of the sturdy little building, they reined their mounts to skidding halts. Frank hung on to the reins, keeping the stallion with him. One of Magnuson's men, clad in oil-smeared overalls, crouched behind the shed with a rifle in his hand. When he turned to look at the newcomers, Frank recognized him as Rattigan, the man who'd been driving the wagon full of drillers he had encountered the previous morning. Rattigan swung the rifle barrel toward Frank.
Damn it, boss, look out! He's one of them!
Magnuson grabbed the Winchester's barrel and roughly forced it down.
Hold your fire, you idiot! Morgan works for me now.
That's right, Rattigan. We're on the same side.
Hatch isn't gonna like that.
I don't give a damn what Hatch likes. What's going on here?
Those cowboys started shooting at us from the top of the ridge. The bullets just came out of nowhere. They didn't give us any warning, just opened up on us.
The hell you say?
How do you know they're ranch hands? Did you get a look at any of them?
How could we get a look at them? They're 100 yards away, in those trees on the ridge. Anyway, we were all too busy ducking bullets and running for cover to stand around gawking at the bastards.
Anybody being hurt so far?
I saw a couple of men go down. I don't know how bad they were hit. Some of the men dragged them behind cover.
Frank looked around the cluster of rigs and saw the two men Rattigan referred to lying behind the base of one of the derricks. They weren't moving, which didn't bode well, and even from a distance, Frank could see the bright crimson splashes of blood on their work clothes. Magnuson jerked his rifle from its saddle sheath.
This is the last straw. We'll wipe those damn cattlemen out if we have to.
Take it easy. Flying off the handle's not gonna help.
Whose side are you on, Morgan? I knew I was a fool to trust you. My sister should have never roped you in on this deal.
I'm on your side, like I told Rattigan. But wholesale slaughter's not gonna solve anything.
That's where you're wrong. If we wipe out those Montero punchers, they can't ever ambush us like this again.
Tell your men to hold their fire.
What are you going to do?
I'm gonna circle around, get up on that ridge, and try to put a stop to this fight without anybody else getting hurt.
They saw you riding up with me. They won't hold their fire. They'll just gun you down like they're trying to do the rest of us.
They'll have to hit me first, and Goldie and I don't intend to let that happen.
With that, he pulled the stallion around and heeled Goldie into a gallop again. They burst out from behind the shed and thundered back onto the road, heading away from the drilling rigs. Frank leaned forward, low in the saddle, as bullets whined spitefully around them, searching for him like blazing messengers of death. Frank headed back the way he and Magnuson had come. Slugs kicked up dust in the road around Goldie's flashing hooves. None of the shots found either horse or rider. The stallion was moving so fast, it would have taken an extremely accurate shot to bring either of them down. Once he was out of rifle range, Frank cut to the west, leaving the road and heading toward the spot where the ridge slanted down to the flatter ground. The bushwhackers on the ridge might not see him coming right away because of one of the brushy knobs that jutted up and blocked their view, but they could be looking for him anyway. If they had recognized him, it was unlikely they would assume the notorious drifter would just cut and run. They would be expecting him to try something. On the other hand, maybe they hadn't got a good enough look at him to realize who he was. There was only one way to find out, Frank told himself. He knew he couldn't ride off and leave the drillers pinned down there to be picked off one by one, no matter how abrasive Victor Magnuson was. Frank circled all the way around the ridge, then dropped off Goldie when he spotted a gully that ran all the way to the top of the slope. Wolf crowded close beside him as Frank began making his way up the gully. Goldie would stay close at the bottom, waiting for Frank to either return or summon him with a shrill whistle. Frank had his Colt in his hand, but he hoped he wouldn't have to use it, at least not to kill. He followed the sound of shots, making his way through the thick brush with a minimum of noise. He had a panther-like grace about him that enabled him to approach one of the bushwhackers from the rear without even the faintest crackle of branches to warn the man. A pang of disappointment went through Frank as he recognized one of the hands from the Montero Ranch. He had been hoping that someone other than Dolores' crew was responsible for this attack on the drilling rigs, but clearly that wasn't the case. When Frank was within arm's reach and the gunman still hadn't noticed him, he brought the butt of the heavy revolver crashing down on the man's head. Frank pulled the man's belt off, pulled his arms behind his back, and used the belt to lash his wrists together. He took the man's bandana off and crammed it into the cowboy's mouth. It would take the hombre a minute or two anyway to spit out the makeshift gag when he regained consciousness. Then Frank tossed the man's rifle and six gun into the brush, where they wouldn't be easy to find. From the sound of the shots, Frank estimated there were at least a dozen men up there on the ridge firing down at the drillers. It was too much to hope that he could sneak up on all of them and knock them out, Frank knew. But he intended to whittle down the odds as much as he could. Luck was against him, though, because he suddenly came to a clearing where a couple of cowboys were holding the horses of the other men. The horses reacted to Wolf's presence and began rearing as the cowboys struggled to control them. One of the men spotted Frank.
Morgan! Over here! It's Morgan!
It was Jeff. He let go of the reins he was holding and clawed at the butt of the revolver on his hip instead. That was a mistake, because the spooked horses he had just released bolted, and the shoulder of one of them slammed into Jeff as it went past, sending the young cowboy flying off his feet. The horses stampeded off. And it was all the other man could do to hang on to the ones he still had hold of. Frank leveled his Colt at the man.
Let him go.
Mister, I can't. Then we'd all be afoot.
That's the idea. Now let go of those reins if you know what's good for you.
The man's face paled under its tan, and his fingers spread out as he released the reins in both hands. The horses took off. Some of them came between Frank and the second cowboy, though, and the man took advantage of the opportunity to snatch his gun out of its holster. Before he could raise it and fire, though, Frank sprang across the clearing and slashed at the man's head with his Colt. Frank's left hand closed around the wrist of his gun hand and twisted hard. Frank released the man's wrist and brought his left fist up in a short, hard blow to the jaw. As he turned, Frank felt the heat of the bullet as it passed by his cheek. Jeff had recovered from being knocked down by the horse and was on his knees, the gun in his hand thrust out in front of him. He froze that way, eyes widening, as he found himself staring down the barrel of Frank's Colt.
Drop it, Jeff. I don't want to kill you.
You said that to Lonnie, and he's dead!
As Jeff hesitated with his own finger on the trigger, Frank heard running footsteps crashing through the brush toward him. Frank knew that if the rest of the Salida del Sol crew came up and saw him pointing his Colt at Jeff, they would open fire to save their young compadre. So he did the only thing he could. Frank lowered his own weapon.
All right, son. You got the drop on me.
Slowly, Frank couched his iron. He was standing there with his hands at his side when several more men burst into the clearing and leveled rifles and six guns at him. He was surrounded.
Hold your fire!
It was Pete Linderman, Dolores Montero's foreman. He circled around Frank, covering him with a Winchester. Blood dripped from a bullet burn on Linderman's leathery cheek.
Morgan, I didn't want to believe it was you. After fighting side by side with you last night, I didn't figure you'd go over to the enemy this quick.
How do you know I'm working for Magnuson?
He made us let go of the horses. We're set afoot, Pete, and those damn drillers are liable to come after us again.
We've got the high ground now. They won't get away with bushwhacking us again.
I didn't have anything to do with ambushing you, Linderman. And neither did those drillers down there.
Bullshit! I saw you and Magnuson riding up with my own eyes, Morgan. The Senor wouldn't hire you, so you went and sold your gun to that bastard.
It's true that I'm working for Magnuson, but what I'm really trying to do is find out who's causing trouble for both sides in the valley.
Well, I can tell you who's causing the trouble, mister. It's them greasy oil varmints.
Tell me what happened.
The hell with that! You probably know as well as we do. You and Magnuson probably planned the whole thing and then rode out here to see how it turned out. Well, it backfired on you, Morgan. Somebody get his gun and then tie him up. We're taking him back to the hacienda.
Hold on. If you don't want to explain it to me, then let me tell you what happened.
Of course you know.
Like I said, you and Magnuson must have planned the ambush.
You and your men were riding the range not far from here. Somebody opened fire on you from the top of this ridge. Probably wounded a couple of you.
Ed Matthews is more than wounded. He took a bullet right through the brisket. He's dead.
I'm sorry to hear that. For what it's worth, a couple of the drillers down there are wounded, and maybe dead.
Well, they had it coming. Bushwhacking sons of bitches.
The drillers aren't the ones who shot at you.
What the hell are you talking about? Of course they are. We charged up here and ran them back down there to those rigs.
Did you see any of them shooting at you?
Damn right we did. They're hiding behind their sheds in those derricks.
No, I mean when the shooting first started. Did you see them up here on the ridge? Did you see them running back down to the wells?
That don't mean anything. It had to be them who shot at us. Who else could it have been?
That's the question we all need to answer. Here's the way I see it. The bushwhackers were up here on this ridge. They'd probably been following you to see which direction you were going, then circled around to set up their trap.
On horseback, you mean?
That's right. I saw the dust their horses raised a while ago. Some of them got on this side of the ridge and some on the other, and they opened fire on you fellas at the same time as they started shooting at those drillers on the other side of the ridge. All it would take was one volley each way. Then they lit a shuck out of here.
What the hell are you talking about?
You charged right up here, didn't you? And by that time, the drillers had gotten behind some cover and were shooting at the top of the ridge, because that's where they'd been ambushed from a minute earlier. You thought they'd taken those first shots at your bunch and then run down the hill so you return their fire. It makes perfect sense.
Oh, don't listen to him, Pete. He's in with Magnuson. We saw it for ourselves.
Hold on a minute. You're saying that somebody tricked us and those drillers into shooting at each other by bushwhacking both sides?
That's exactly what I'm saying. There's already a wedge between the two bunches. Now that men have been badly wounded or killed on both sides, it'll just be driven in deeper. Unless you and your men listen to reason, Linderman.
What about them? What about Magnuson's bunch? They were shooting at us, no doubt about that.
Only because they believed you shot at them first.
Damn it, this is making my head hurt. But I reckon things could have happened the way you're saying they did, Morgan. Wouldn't we have seen or heard the fellas riding off, though, if they did like you said?
What did you do when the first shots rang out?
Well, we were out in the open, so we picked up Ed and hustled into the cover of some trees. Once we figured out where the shots were coming from, we charged up here to flush the bastards out.
So if they left a couple of men behind to keep you occupied for a few minutes and make you think there were more hombres up here than there really were, the others could have ridden along the ridge and dropped down off it somewhere else.
Maybe. Wouldn't those oil drillers have seen them if they did that?
Not if they stayed just on this side of the crest. There are enough trees up there to screen them from view.
You make a good case for it, Morgan, but where's the proof?
One of the drillers told me they were working down there when someone opened fire on them from the ridge. They just naturally assumed it was you fellas from Salida del Sol, and a couple of minutes later, it was.
Yeah, that's fine if you want to believe a bunch of lying oil men. As far as I'm concerned, they stink of brimstone because they come straight out of hell.
If you want proof, why don't you check for hoof prints or droppings somewhere along the ridge? Your horses were left on this side. If you find evidence of another group of riders being up here, you'll know that I'm right about what happened.
That's not exactly proof, but I reckon we could take a look around.
Why don't you let your men do that? You and I'll go talk to Magnuson and get the driller side of the story.
Talk to Magnuson? I don't have anything to say to that skunk. Not unless it's over the barrel of a gun. I don't care what started it. They still shot at us.
In what seemed to them like self-defense. But I reckon if you're afraid that you'll find out I'm right.
I'm not afraid of Magnuson or any other damn driller. Take a look for tracks and horse apples along the ridge. Morgan and I are gonna go talk to Magnuson.
The drillers' guns had fallen silent several minutes earlier, when the members of the Montero crew had stopped firing down at them from the ridge in order to surround Frank. Now there was always the chance that they would open fire again when Frank and Linderman stepped out of the trees and into view. If that happened, they would be dead men.
Hold your fire! Nobody shoot unless they start it.
Sounds like Magnuson don't fully trust you either, Morgan.
Well, I'm sort of getting used to nobody around here trusting me. I still don't like it.
Reckon you'd be used to it, you being a hired gun and all.
Magnuson and the drillers didn't emerge from cover. They stayed behind the sheds and derricks with the barrels of their rifles poking out, ready to open fire again. When Frank and Linderman reached the road, Magnuson called out.
That's far enough! What are you doing with that cowboy, Morgan? Switching sides already?
Frank felt a surge of anger. He wasn't sure he had ever encountered such a level of distrust as the one that seemed to infect everybody in these parts. They were all mighty quick to jump to conclusions, especially where he was concerned.
I'm calling a truce, Magnuson. Come on out here so you and Linderman can hash this out.
There's nothing to hash out. They're a bunch of murdering, bushwhacking bastards. Both of my men who were wounded have died.
Senora Montero's men didn't attack you, Magnuson.
You're crazy! That's her foreman, Pete Linderman, with you right there.
Come on out here and talk it over. I'll prove to you that you're wrong.
Magnuson couldn't resist that challenge. He stalked out from behind the shed where he had been crouched with Radigan. His spade beard jutted forward as his jaw thrust out belligerently. He came toward Frank and Linderman with his rifle held slanted across his broad chest. He came to a stop with the road still between him and the other two men.
All right. If you've got something to say, Morgan, go ahead and say it.
Pay attention. I'm gonna tell you what really happened here.
Quickly, Frank went over the same theory he had laid out for Linderman and the Salida del Sol ranch hands. Magnuson's bushy red eyebrows drew down in a puzzled frown as he listened.
Wait a minute. Radigan, come over here.
What do you want, Mr. Magnuson?
Did you see the men who were shooting at you from the ridge?
Sure did. We saw them jumping around from tree to tree and rock to rock up there while they were getting into position to massacre us.
No, before that, when you heard the first shots, did you look up there and see anybody then?
No. We were too busy running for cover. But we saw plenty of powder smoke from the top of the ridge, at least I did. I can't speak for all the other fellows.
You see, your men can't say for sure that it was Linderman and his pards shooting at them until after the fighting started.
You really expect me to believe that somebody else was responsible for this bloodshed? That they tricked my men and the cowboys into shooting at each other?
That's exactly what I believe.
You've got to admit, it could have happened the way Morgan says, Magnuson. I figured it was a loco idea at first, too, but now that I've thought about it, I reckon maybe he's right.
I don't know. Who'd have a reason to do such a thing?
Well, that's what I haven't figured out just yet. But I'm going to.
I've got to have more proof than you've come up with so far, Morgan.
Then give me a chance to get it. Keep this truce going for the time being while I look into the situation.
I never agreed to any damn truce.
Neither did I. But I'm willing to tell my boys to steer clear of your rigs for now, Magnuson. You'll promise not to cause any trouble for us.
We haven't been. We just want to be left alone to drill for oil.
To stink up the air and ruin the land for our cattle, you mean?
How about it? Truce?
All right, damn it, truce.
Sure, I'll go along with that. You gotta remember one thing, though, Morgan.
What's that?
I don't speak for the Senora. She may tell Magnuson to take his truce and stick it where the sun don't shine.
It's not my truce, it's Morgan's.
I don't care whose truce it is, as long as the two sides aren't shooting at each other.
Tension was still thick in the air as Frank and Linderman started back up the slope toward the top of the ridge. The drillers started slowly coming out from behind the sheds and the derricks, and some of the cowboys emerged from the trees, still holding their rifles in a threatening manner. Frank had explained to Magnuson that he had to return to the top of the ridge to get Goldie and Wolf. Also, he wanted to check and see if Linderman's men had found any sign of the riders he suspected of starting the battle.
Hey, Pete! You better come and have a look at this.
What is it?
Well, I hate to say it, but I think maybe Morgan was right.
About there being another bunch of riders?
Yeah. Take a gander at those prints.
They look pretty fresh.
And none of our horses were this far up the slope.
Just because another rider passed along here sometime today doesn't mean that Morgan's right.
One of the other cowboys stepped forward and held out his hand. Sunlight reflected off of something that lay on his work-roughened palm.
What about this, Pete?
Linderman took the object from the man. Frank could tell now that it was a used shell from a rifle cartridge.
Mind if I have a look? 30-30, isn't it?
Yeah, and all of our Winchesters are 44-40s.
You're saying that it didn't come from one of your rifles?
I reckon not. But damn it, how could they plan on getting away with a thing like that? Didn't they know we'd figure it out sooner or later?
Do you think you really would have? Would you have looked for hoof prints or shells from a different caliber rifle? Or would you and the drillers have just kept shooting at each other until one side or the other was wiped out?
It would have been them. We had them pinned down good and proper.
That's right. And you would have killed them thinking you were settling the score for Ed Matthews, when all you really would have been doing was the dirty work for whoever keeps stirring up all this trouble.
Are you saying that none of what's been going on here in the valley was the doing of those damn drillers?
I can't make that claim, but it wouldn't surprise me. And I'd bet a hat that Magnuson and his men didn't have anything to do with the attack on Salida del Sol last night.
Well, what the hell do we do now?
If it was me, I'd try to round up those horses that stampeded off a while ago. Otherwise, you boys are gonna have a long, uncomfortable walk back to the bunkhouse.
What about you? What are you gonna do, Morgan?
Thought I'd see if I can follow the sign that the real bushwhackers left behind. They've gotta be holed up somewhere here in the valley.
They had to do something with all those cows they've rustled, too. We've tried to follow the trail before, but always lost it up in the San Gabriels. You reckon you'll have better luck than we did?
I don't know, but I intend to try.
Linderman and the other Salida del Sol punchers went to find their horses. Frank didn't have to do that, because a whistle brought Goldie up the slope to him. He swung up into the saddle and rode along the ridge, with Wolf trailing behind him. Eyes that were still keen, despite the years, spotted several more hoof prints, and as the trail led down the slope, Frank found even more signs. It looked like 14 or 15 men, he estimated, a good-sized group. Whoever was out to raise hell in the valley had plenty of gunmen at its disposal. That worried Frank. Things seemed to be escalating. Last night, the attack on the barn at Salida del Sol. Today, the attempt to trick the cowboys and the drillers into waging open war on each other. Whoever was behind this must be getting impatient, Frank decided. Whether or not that had anything to do with his own arrival in the area, he couldn't say, but he thought it was possible. Somebody wanted the conflict between the oil men and the cattlemen to explode into a bloody war before Frank had a chance to stop it.
Might as well earn your keep, Wolf. See if you can pick up the scent of those horses we're following.
Wolf ranged ahead, nose to the ground. Frank had confidence in his own tracking ability, but Wolf, with his extremely sensitive nose, was better. The trail led down the western slope of the ridge, and then paralleled it for more than a mile before the rugged wooded height came to an end. At that point, the riders had turned and headed northeast, cutting across the valley toward the San Gabriel Mountains on the far side. Frank recalled the description Stafford had given him of the way the ranches were laid out in the valley.
This is Jorge Sandoval's range now.
If Sandoval's plan had worked out, and Dolores had agreed to the merger of their two ranches once she inherited Salida del Sol, then they would have controlled by far the largest amount of range in these parts. Would Sandoval go so far as to try to ruin his own sister's ranch so that he could gobble it up? It was an intriguing thought. Frank's questions might be answered if he could track the bushwhackers to their hideout. He was convinced that the gunmen were also the ones who had carried out the rustling. He just needed to get his hands on one of the varmints and make him talk. Wolf still had the scent, but he lost it when they came to a creek. Frank watched the big cur loping back and forth along the opposite bank. The men they were following weren't greenhorns. Just in case someone was following them, they had ridden one way or the other along the shallow creek to throw off any pursuit. Frank's only option was to choose a direction and hope that Wolf could pick up the scent again. And if the bushwhackers had doubled back, then even that might not do any good. He was glad that he had brought a couple of biscuits from the hotel dining room and slipped them into his saddlebags. This looked like it might be a long day, and Frank wouldn't be getting back to town for lunch. Frank's prediction proved to be accurate. He and Goldie and Wolf spent several hours riding up and down the creek, checking both sides in both directions for any sign left by the men they were after. It was well after noon before Wolf suddenly put his nose to the ground and loped off toward the San Gabriels once again. Feeling a sense of relief, Frank dug out one of the biscuits to snack on as he turned Goldie and followed his canine tracker. Once Wolf had the scent again, he headed straight as an arrow toward the mountains. The bushwhackers might have thought that their jog through the creek had thrown off any pursuit, so they didn't waste time veering back and forth. By late afternoon, they were in the foothills of the San Gabriels, which were heavily wooded. The town of Pasadena was several miles to the east, Frank recalled, but over here the mountains were still wild and only lightly populated. Frank scanned the sky over the foothills for smoke from a campfire or stove, but didn't see any.
Slow down, Wolf. We don't want to ride into the middle of that bunch without any warning.
Wolf followed Frank's command. They had long since left the old wagon road that cut across the San Fernando Valley, the trace that had been established by Remy Nadeau decades earlier. Frank began noticing signs that animals had been driven through here, though. A visible path had been beaten down by their hooves.
Those rustled cattle passed here. You must be on the right trail.
The path led over a saddle in a long ridge, and then curved into a steep-sided canyon about 100 yards wide. Frank reined Goldie to a halt just outside the canyon. Instinct told him that his quarry wasn't too far away.
Stay here, Wolf. I'm going ahead on foot.
Frank led Goldie into a clump of trees and looped the reins around a sapling so that it would be easy enough for the stallion to pull free if necessary. Then he pulled his Winchester from the saddle boot and started into the canyon. Frank took it slow and careful, using every bit of cover he could find as he made his way through the canyon. It narrowed down to about 50 yards across. If this was the entrance to the gang's hideout, they were bound to have guards posted somewhere, keeping an eye on the place. Frank didn't want them to spot him. He froze as a faint smell of tobacco smoke drifted to his nose. A moment later, he heard a pebble bouncing down a slope. There was a sentry somewhere above and ahead of him, he realized. The man was smoking a Corley and moving around enough to have dislodged a rock. That was pretty careless of him, but Frank figured the guard wasn't really expecting trouble. The outlaws were probably confident that no one knew where their hideout was. Frank knew, though. The stolen cattle might be somewhere up ahead, too. Their presence would be the last bit of evidence he needed to make the law take action. Frank stayed where he was, motionless and silent, until he heard the guard shifting around again. A faint smile touched Frank's grim mouth. The hombre might as well be shouting out loud to announce his presence. He was behind some rocks on a ledge, in a place where he could see anyone who came through the canyon, except someone who hugged the stone wall below him and could move quietly enough not to be heard. Frank looked long and hard at the other side of the canyon to make sure no sentries were posted over there. There wasn't a good place for a guard to hide. The canyon wall was too steep and sheer. And as confident, even arrogant, as this gang seemed to be, they probably thought one sentry was enough. Placing his booted feet carefully, Frank slipped along the rocky wall. He kept the Winchester in his right hand, well away from the rocks so that its barrel wouldn't bump against them and make a racket. Soon the guard was behind him, and he could move a little faster, although he was still careful to make as little noise as possible. The canyon began to widen again. Within a few hundred yards, it had spread out until it was a quarter of a mile across. It was a box canyon, though, Frank realized, ending in a 50-foot-tall stone wall that completely enclosed the large park-like area. He crouched in some brush to study the hideout. A couple of crude log cabins were next to the far wall, which thrust out enough so that its overhang created a cave of sorts underneath it. That was where a large campfire was located. The rock ceiling deflected and dispersed the smoke from the fire, making the hideout even more difficult to find. A pole corral for the gang's horses had been thrown up near the cabins. For water, a little stream trickled out of the rock wall, ran across the clearing for a couple of hundred yards, and ended in a small pond. About 50 head of cattle grazed along the banks of the tiny creek. Those were the only cows Frank saw. He knew that more than that had been rustled from the ranchers in the valley, so he figured the others had already been sold off. The little jag being held here now would be the spoils from the gang's most recent raid. Frank tried to count the horses in the corral, but could only estimate them as being between 30 and 40. A few men were moving around the cabins. Frank had what he needed. The location of the hideout and proof that these men were really the ones causing the trouble in the San Fernando Valley. The county sheriff might not want to accept Frank's word for it, but Stafford ought to be able to push the man into bringing a posse out here to see for himself, Frank thought. It was time now to get back to Goldie and head for Los Angeles. Frank cast a glance at the sky above the canyon and realized that the sun was no longer visible. It had dropped down below the walls of the canyon and shadows had already begun to gather. Night would come on quickly now. Frank didn't mind, because the gloom would help him get past the guard without being spotted. He turned to head in that direction. Loud voices stopped him. More men were coming out of the cabins now, he saw, as he swung back around. The gang was about to pull out. Not for good, obviously, because those rustled cattle were still here. But the fact that they were saddling up to leave didn't bode well. Frank had already figured out from the violence of the past 2 days that things were starting to rush to a conclusion, possibly because his own presence had spooked the mastermind into speeding up the plan. So even though the gang had already caused that ruckus between Magnuson's men and the Salida del Sol crew, now they were setting out on more deadly mischief. And the only thing between them and whatever they had planned was the Drifter. The question now, Frank thought, as approximately 25 men thundered past him on horseback, was whether any of them would spot Goldie and Wolf near the entrance to the canyon. They sped past the sentry, then reached the canyon mouth and disappeared as they veered away from the opening, leaving nothing behind but a slight haze of dust that blew away quickly in the twilight breeze. Luckily, the gunman hadn't spotted Goldie and grown suspicious. The only obstacle Frank had to avoid now was the guard. With the same sort of stealth that had carried him into the canyon, Frank cat-footed his way back out. The guard was humming softly to himself this time as Frank crept along beneath him. This fellow was one of the worst sentries he'd ever run into. Frank trotted out of the canyon a couple of minutes later and headed toward the spot where he'd left Goldie. Wolf came out of the shadows, too, to nuzzle Frank's hand. He slid the Winchester back into its sheath. He jerked the reins loose from the sapling and swung up into the saddle.
You critters did a good job of staying out of sight. The night's work isn't over, though.
Frank rode through the foothills and then headed straight across the valley toward Salida del Sol. Most of the trouble seemed to revolve around Senora Montero's ranch, so Frank figured it was a good bet that would hold true tonight, too. Leaning forward in the saddle, he urged Goldie into a run.